Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
All right, in an absurd twist of events, Melania Trump, who you may recognize from the feature film Melania, is currently heading a UN meeting on conflicts as her husband is beginning a conflict in the Middle East. A regional conflict between Iran, Israel, and the United States has sparked, with multiple U.S. service members dying, over 100 school children dying, and for some reason, Melania Trump is out there leading the way. I am joined by friend of the show, Pondering Politics, or Josiah, and we're going to talk a little bit about our thoughts about this war, some genuine concerns and things that we've been thinking since this has broken out. I think this will be a really genuine, good conversation. Before we jump in, let's watch this clip of Melania leading this meeting. This reads, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump is the first spouse of any world leader to ever chair a meeting of the 15-member Security Council. She's the first person to ever do this. And it's the UN body charged with maintaining international peace and security. The plan was announced last week before the launch of U.S. and Israeli strikes, and they decided not to cancel it. Here's a clip.
Of the Council's provisional rules of procedure, I invite Ms. Rosemary DiCarlo, Undersecretary General of Political and Peacebuilding Affairs, to participate in this meeting. It is so decided.
Very captivating stuff. Josiah, what are your initial reactions to the Melania of it all? And thank you for joining, man.
I'm going to do the Melania nod from here on out when I'm having a conversation with somebody. So that's what I just treated you to. Adam, it's always good to be with you, buddy. Thank you for the invitation. My first thought is, I'm just trying to imagine if it had been Dr. Jill Biden, or if it had been Michelle Obama, if it had been the first lady under a Democratic president, the sort of shit we would hear nonstop from Republicans, like, who the hell are you to be chairing this particular committee hearing you're not elected? You know, there's, as far as I'm aware, there is no robust career in conflict management or international conflict management. Although I did see Mike Waltz of Signalgate fame sitting behind her. And maybe what it was, Adam, is they were like, oh, shit, we only have Mike Waltz and Melania Trump on this trip. Mike is going to leak it to the press, so we might as well put him in the cuck chair, you know, and have Melania
enough more English than Mike Waltz at this point.
She's definitely a better communicator, to be sure. I think it suggests a lack of seriousness for the topic to have Melania Trump out there. I think that it's great to have meetings about conflict resolution, but as you signaled in your introduction, it's kind of falling on, you know, deaf ears, so to speak, when Donald Trump is unilaterally and unconstitutionally waging a regime change war in Iran. But quite frankly, that could be the other reason why she's there, Adam, is because her husband has even less credibility on conflict resolution than she does.
Yeah, it's really insane. We've known that for the past year, she's been in Donald Trump's ear trying to get him to do anything about the war in Ukraine, and he refuses to do it. He continues to get tricked by Vladimir Putin. Now he's starting new wars. You know, they called it the 12-day war a few months back, but we are on day 264. When we struck their nuclear facilities back in June, J.D. Vance made a bunch of smug tweets about how he's leading to peace in the Middle East, and the 12-day war is over. They smugly and pretentiously named it the 12-day war in an unearned manner. And now we are on day 264 of that same exact war. Donald Trump told CNN a few hours ago that a new big wave will come. And the biggest wave yet has yet to come with Iran, which is signaling more escalation, more retaliation from Iran. And from my understanding, what Iran is doing right now is inflicting maximum damage on the U.S. because they do not want the U.S. to continue to strike them. We, again, struck them back in June, and Iran kind of didn't really respond in a meaningful way. They struck some sites, but then purposefully missed those sites. This time, they said, we are going to intentionally try to take lives, cost the U.S. Lives, money, military equipment, all of this, because we want Donald Trump to cower. Trump did cower. Trump immediately tried to ask for a ceasefire, like 24 hours after launching, and guess what they did? They rejected the ceasefire, which is not what you want to see. We all want the war to end. We don't want anyone to die. But it's absurd to me that Trump thinks he can escalate, is drug into this by Israel, and then runs with his tail tucked behind the legs as U.S. troops are bearing the brunt of this, as Iranian schoolchildren are bearing the brunt of this. There was a shooter in Austin, Texas, and some people are saying he went crazy partially due to the war that broke out. People in Austin are bearing the brunt of this. Our taxpayer dollars are bearing the brunt of another perpetual endless war, and it's sickening. So, you know, as someone, you were more politically conscious than I was, I'm sure, during the Iraq war, during the other invasions that this is mirroring. I was 3 or 4 years old at the time. Do you see a mirror here in what's happening and the lies coming from our government?
You know, that was a very polite and well-informed way to tell your audience that I'm older than you, and I am older than you, and I don't appreciate the reminder, sir. But let me listen. I became politically conscious right at the very end of the Bush administration. I just missed the opportunity to vote for President Obama. I was 17 at the time of his election. Well, I guess he was elected in November 2008, and he was seated in 2009. So yeah, I wasn't yet 18 years old, and his re-election was the first election I voted in. You still had the lingering effects of the Iraq war and just the war on terror in general. Listen, I don't know if it's going to be a one-to-one parallel. I'm not much of a prognosticator here, but I can tell you that there are certain parallels which are disturbing. Number one, which is the hubris, right? Obviously, technology has advanced substantially since, you know, the early 2000s and the mid-2000s when those two wars under President Bush, you know, were triggered and escalated. But the fact of the matter is, you know, as historians and military historians will tell you, regime change, and the Trump administration is seeking regime change. They contradict themselves all the time. Yep. In the past 72 hours. Oh, it's regime change, but not really. Well, we didn't try to do regime change, but the regime certainly did change as a result. Like just this whole bullshit from Pete Hegseth and Trump, yep. They are seeking regime change. And you can't acquire that just through air superiority. You will eventually have to put boots on the ground. Otherwise, it's a half measure. To your point, I think the reporting indicates that Trump wanted to go for a Venezuela-style operation. You know, when he did strikes in Caracas, he abducted Maduro, and he got out of there without any major injuries or fatalities. And there was a lot of spectacle about it. It didn't help him in the polls. Like, that's the other thing. I don't see what the political benefit is to this. It certainly didn't help. In some cases, I think it hurt him. And I think he just tried to do it again, you know, yeah. And he got it in his head that he would be able to do something similar. And it's not worked. To your point, at the time of recording, there have been 6 confirmed U.S. service member casualties. Oh, wow. 6. Okay. First, it was 3, then it was 4, and then they found the remains of 2 additional ones, CENTCOM reported about an hour ago. And so those deaths are on Donald Trump. And listen, yep. I just want to wrap up with this particular part with this before I throw it back to you. This is something I've been talking about in my commentary. Anytime a U.S. service member dies under any president, the president of the United States is commander in chief, so they bear what's called command responsibility. It happened on your watch, ultimately with your authorization. At some level, you are responsible for those deaths. When 13 service people died under President Biden in the withdrawal from Afghanistan at Abbey Gate in Kabul, it wasn't just that he bore command responsibility as far as the Republicans were concerned. He was morally responsible. There were Republican lawmakers out there who said the blood's on Joe Biden's hands. He got them killed. They died because of him. And I am a firm believer in single standards. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. So if we are going to assign that level of blame to Biden for trying to get out of a war that he inherited, that Trump promised, by the way, he'd end in his first term, failed to do so, kicked the can down the road, left Biden holding the bag, then Donald Trump is at least as responsible for the deaths of these 6 service members. And quite frankly, I know a lot of people watch your channel, including Democratic operative strategists and candidates. Hey, if you're a candidate and you're watching, you need to be talking about it in those terms. They died because of Trump. It's Trump's fault. He is militarily responsible. He's morally responsible. And you, Mr. Politician, should make sure that he is held politically responsible. Don't just assume the American people will draw the connection. Make it explicit. They are dead because of Trump, period.
And it just comes in such stark contrast to the way that he ran as an anti-interventionist who would put America first. And I keep explaining this pipeline that we see where people went from, you know, Bush Republicans to MAGA then back to Bush Republicans. Think about it. We had the Bush, Dick Cheney era. Trump comes along and says, we're going to put America first, so much so we're not even going to intervene in Ukraine. We're basically going to abandon them, push NATO away, and stick with America. Then he gets into office, and he immediately begins to attack Greenland verbally, attack Canada verbally, and then attack Venezuela. And Republicans start to make this hemispheric argument. They say, okay, if the country is in our hemisphere, then we can dominate them and take control. That is the only way.
The Donroe Doctrine.
The Donroe Doctrine, they said. And then we strike Iran, and we're basically looping back to Dick Cheney era. They're like, you know, okay, we've said the hemisphere thing, but actually we also mean the Middle East, technically. And now we're learning from Marco Rubio that we were just directly pulled into this by Israel. I'm going to play a clip of him from about 2 or 3 hours ago where he's talking about why now.
The second question that's been asked is, why now? Well, there's two reasons why now. The first is it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. The orders had been delegated down to the field commanders. It was automatic, and in fact, it bared to be true, because in fact, within an hour of the initial attack on the leadership compound, the missile forces in the south and in the north, for that matter, had already been activated to launch. In fact, those had already been pre-positioned. The third is the assessment that was made that if we stood and waited for that attack to come first before we hit them, we would suffer much higher casualties. And so the president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer.
It doesn't make sense. He's saying basically that there was going to be a preemptive attack from Iran, but because of Israel, so it's actually retaliatory. And none of this makes sense. I also want to point out that Marco Rubio has been out in the spotlight a lot more than J.D. Vance, especially on this issue. Has J.D. Vance said anything yet, or am I mistaken?
I've not seen it, and at this point, I think it would be generating like a headline on media. When last I heard, he is not. We've seen clips circulate, but they're old clips referencing, you know, Operation Midnight Hammer and just other things in general. But no, I don't think there's been anything new that I'm aware of at the time of recording from J.D. Vance. And I mean, listen, there's no question that given the current neoconservative foreign policy posture, Marco Rubio is certainly more credible as a spokesperson for that because he is at heart a Bush-era neocon, right? It's part of the reason why he was rejected by what we now call the MAGA movement in 2016 during that primary, right? Because the MAGA movement claimed that they wanted something more over time. And I think this is important. When MAGA began, it had a nexus of cultishness in it, but the broader movement at the time was not cultish. It developed into a cult of personality during the course of Trump's first presidency. So what we're seeing now is that MAGA is at a point where there are no fixed principles whatsoever. MAGA truly is whatever the hell Donald Trump claims it happens to be at the time. And that's why you can take none of what they say seriously, just collectively speaking. If a MAGA official or MAGA pundit says X, you have absolutely no reason whatsoever to believe them, right? It's just totally transient. So I'm not surprised that J.D. Vance has been sidelined in this respect. He'd probably get a ton of uncomfortable questions about it because they'd be hitting him with all the shit that he has been talking over the past few years. But you're right. The incoherence of their messaging is extraordinary. There's a line from Andor, the Star Wars TV show, which is amazing, and it's Mon Mothma's character saying they're not even bothering to lie badly anymore, and that's what it is. We totally obliterated the nuclear site, but also the nuclear program, it's there. We obliterated it, but also like not, and so we had to obliterate it again. But we totally obliterated it the first, and he just wants to have his cake and eat it too. And what he's banking on is that there will be a sufficient number of people who will just lap it up. And he's right about that. I just think he's overestimating the number. There is 30% of the American people who will just buy into whatever Donald Trump says. But he thinks it's pushing 50 or beyond. And I think he's wrong about that.
I think that it's eroded very rapidly, even over the course of the past 6 months. You can see this in the polling. It has broken through a seal, or I guess it would be a basement, so to speak. He had like a level of support that stayed there. And it has broken through that, especially after Epstein, especially after Alex Preddy and Renee Good. A lot of my friends who were more apolitical and just barely like political stuff online, I saw them reposting stuff around Alex Preddy and Renee Good, holding signs that were anti-ICE, connecting it with this administration. And now, between the economy not doing too well, and between the very brazen war that Donald Trump just started that has now resulted in 6 service members dying, hundreds more dying in Iran. It's just, it's hit a boiling point. I think the American people will rapidly see that Donald Trump should not be in office, and the midterms are going to be rather brutal for the Republican Party. We have Democrats in Congress proposing a war powers resolution to get Republicans on the record, or at least take control of Donald Trump's unilateral ability to start wars. But we'll have to see what happens. You know, I want to read this poll. It says only 1 in 4 Americans approve of the strikes on Iran that killed their supreme leader, according to a new Reuters Ipsos survey released less than 48 hours after the United States and Israel launched deadly joint military strikes. And I can guarantee you, as this administration continues to botch their response and their communication surrounding this, the more Melania Trumps and Marco Rubios we have out there responding to this, the worse it's going to do.
I want to say this, too. I've seen those polls, or I've seen the headlines of those polls, and I'm curious. I assume this was the case, but somebody should confirm it for us. I don't know if those polls have taken into consideration the fact that service members have been killed. My expectation is polls that take place after the American people learn that 6 service people have died because of Donald Trump's neocon ambitions, that support, which was already flagging, will plummet even more. I expect that most of those polls that we have seen are before that information broke.
Yeah, it absolutely they are. So 27% of respondents approved of it then. I'm assuming that's going to break down even further. And Trump has got himself caught in this perpetual cycle now. What's he supposed to do? Back off after they killed 6 U.S. service members? No. The U.S. has to project strength. We have to escalate more. Just what Donald Trump is going to do. It's what he's wired to do. And this escalation will go God knows where. We'll be here every day covering it. We'll be making sure that we fight through it. This is Adam Mockler and Josiah from Pondering Politics. You can subscribe to both of us below. Find both of our channels below. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll do more of these. Peace out.
Yeah, thank you.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.